Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, which shares a transformative journey through spiritual awakening, spiritual communication, healing energies, miracles, and finding the truth of our true human and divine connections. Today I am most delighted to welcome Joseph Emmett, author of Finding the Blue Sky, who will share his journey towards happiness through the Buddhist path of mindfulness, which guides us on a path to knowing ourselves, the universe, and the gift of life with clarity and gratitude. Hello, Joseph, and thank you for joining us today.
Hello, it's my pleasure. I really enjoyed your introduction and the way you set up our interview.
Oh, thank you very much. Joseph, as listeners of Healing From Within have come to expect over the years, my guests and I share our unique discoveries about self, our dual nature as spiritual beings having a physical life, and the universal laws of energy, which when utilized, allow for a happy, prosperous, and healthy human life journey. It is, we discover, that by moving past self, doubt, excuses, and the programmed realities of our childhood, that we can open our mind and heart to the full possibilities for knowing life on a multidimensional level. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Joseph Emmett, the founder of the Mindfulness Meditation Center in Montreal, will share his journey from childhood to his receiving a doctorate in music from Boston University and his training with Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh in France that encouraged several books about sleep, stress reduction, and meditation. We will discuss today how to replace negative thinking with positive thinking, how to move from frenzied thinking to quiet contemplation, and the duty we have to others to live a happy life. Joseph, I always love to ask my guests to think back to their childhood and try to remember a person, event, or experience that was important to them and may have shown either them or those around them something about their life plan or destiny. So can you think back for a minute?
Well, perhaps you're describing what a French author called privileged moments. Moments when something like a veil lifts and you feel one with everything. You feel wonderful. You feel great. And there are moments like that in everybody's life, as you aptly said. Buddha described such a moment, and I remember such a moment. Perhaps you didn't mean me to go so far back, but I remember one moment when I was with my mother, maybe 2 or 3 years old, and it was a beautiful sunny day. We were in the park, and everything was perfect. The sky was blue, the trees were green. My mother was young and beautiful, and it's just one of those privileged moments.
I would assume you felt very loved.
Yeah, for sure. That was part of the deal, for sure.
In that moment.
Mm-hmm.
All right, go on. You may have not been finished saying what you wanted to say.
Well, Buddha described a moment like that when he was 7 years old, and there was a festival, and his babysitter left him alone for a moment under the shade of an apple tree, and he describes later on that he felt profoundly happy. One with nature, one with everything, one with the sky, one with the green plants. And he comes back to that experience later on when he is considering happiness, what enlightenment means. He remembers that experience because I think that spirituality and happiness go together. I mean, if you see someone who pretends to be very spiritual and he's, desperately unhappy, I suggest you turn around and go
He's
the
right. He's not getting the true message, if that's possible. Right. You cannot be happy or function in this world at your highest level and potential if you don't know who you are as a spiritual being connected to all that is and everyone else. And you cannot have that kind of moment either, unless you're dealing in the spiritual realm and your spiritual essence. I had a moment like that one day, driving in the car when the sun was above me, and all at once everything was joyful and oneness. And you don't have those all the time because we still are living in the physical world. But if you have it even one moment, it never leaves you, and it brings a smile to your face every time you remember it. If it's not happening all the time, you still have that deep memory within you of that moment. So thank you for reminding us of something very important, that we are the sum total of our experiences, and we want to try to find moments where we feel like that more and more. What inspired you to write Finding the Blue Sky?
Well, some people are born into happy families and they learn happiness at home. That wasn't my case. My parents were not happy people and they were not in a position to give me the gift of happiness. I learned about happiness through my school buddy. He was lucky enough to come from a happy home. And I spent most of my time at his house. And like my house was sort of like same color of gray, whereas his house was all the colors of the rainbow. And but I was sort of didn't know what it was all about until I met Thich Nhat Hanh, my Buddhist teacher, and he systematically he's some Buddhist traditions are emotionally neutral, but Thich Nhat Hanh goes doesn't stay with neutrality. He goes one more step toward positivity, toward happiness, and I was very happy to learn something about happiness from him, and I wanted to share that because I think everybody can do it. And
I
that's
agree.
the
Yeah, I agree. No matter what our circumstances on the outside are, I believe we're all surrounded by spiritual teachers, souls, love. And if we pay attention, we begin to feel it. We begin to know we're more than this physical life and what we're seeing. And if we detach and observe what makes us happy, then it will come from within us, and it will really help other people also to break out of their limitations, their fears, their training, the societal mores that many of them are not true. We're taught many things as children. Most of it is an illusion, as you know. And I like that you said some are, in the book, you said some of us are wealthy by birth. We are born into wealthy families. Others become wealthy by dint of hard work. And this is also true of happiness, and I belong to the second group. But I don't think that your friend was there just randomly. I think life is no coincidence, which was my first book. And we are being guided and helped by spiritual sources. And your friend was there to help you see what was possible. And you found it, and you embraced it, and it led you in a different direction than you would have gone if that friend was not there. So, yeah.
It works both ways, your interpretation is one interpretation, but the other side of the coin is that I gravitated toward it.
Yes, you
I mean,
chose it.
there might have been other people around me I mean, he was not the only person in the class, but perhaps other people did not, feel attracted to what he had, which was just a happy face, happy disposition, happy temperament, and I gravitated toward it.
Yes, it
So
was a choice. It was a choice. Yes.
perhaps an unconscious choice at that
Yes.
time, but definitely,
A,
definitely a choice
maybe
of
a
sorts.
soul choice.
Yeah,
Maybe you're in a, being knew where you had to be and what your life was going to be about, so it had to take you in the right direction. But let's go on to how can we change our ingrained patterns of thinking that we were just talking about, what our teachers and family sometimes want us to believe and make us believe in. How can we change those patterns in order to become happier?
well, it definitely takes a little bit of practice. When you're, some people call it reprogramming the unconscious. A lifetime's worth of habits, you don't expect to do it in a, blink. One thing that I recommend to people I teach or I come across with is to meditate with songs. There's a whole bunch of mindfulness practice songs on my website, mindfulnessmeditationcenter.org, and center is spelled the Canadian way, TRE at the end. And click on books, and then each book there has about a dozen songs. The thing about a song is it addresses both sides of your mind, the verbal side. The words address the verbal side, and the melody addresses the emotional side. So it's better than just, reading about it. The other thing is that a song becomes an earworm. Like each of those songs is maybe 3 minutes long, but it continues to run in your mind after you listen to it. I recommend to people that they take a meditation break during the day, preferably 2, 3 minutes. We can all do it. We can do it in the bus, in the train, in the coffee shop, in the work cafeteria, while taking a walk. 3 minutes. And it'll change your mental state like drastically and put you in a meditative state in that short time so that stress does not build up during the day, so that you come back to that, reconnect with that meditative space as you go along.
All right, I'm going to ask our listeners to listen to one of the songs that you have provided, and we'll take a minute to be quiet while that song is being played, because this is the prelude to change. Meditation helps, music helps, and our attitudes changing also help. So let's get quiet for a minute and listen to the beautiful music that you provide.
Just breathe, just breathe. Everything will be all right. Just breathe, just breathe. Everything will be fine.
That was wonderful. I certainly enjoyed it, and I'm sure our listeners enjoyed hearing that meditative song, meditation and music. Now, let's go on to what role does mindfulness play in happiness?
Well, one definition of mindfulness is paying attention intentionally. Usually we pay attention, our attention is grabbed by events, by what's happening on television, for example. I mean, I was at the gym this morning and TV's on, and somehow your eyes gravitate to that screen and you take in what's there. Also, our spontaneous thoughts, sometimes thoughts of anxiety, worry. Well, paying attention intentionally means that you pay attention to what is good, what's working in your life instead of what's not working, what you're contented with, what you're grateful about, what brings you joy. So focus on those things. And in the book, I talk about being meditation, and I spell being BEEING, meaning that the way a bee makes a beeline to a beautiful flower, it totally ignores what maybe, you know, there may be dog poop on the ground, whatever.
That's a really joyful and excellent metaphor. Yes, the bee makes a line. It doesn't think. It just is behaving in its instinctual, loving way to enjoy life in a way, making the honey and spreading it to other flowers. And yeah, that's a great way to look at what we're talking about here. Mindfulness, engaging in what is good for us and what we really wish to pursue and eliminating things that are perhaps harmful for our growth.
Yes, there is beauty in each person. There is beauty in each man, woman, child. There is beauty in animals. There is beauty in the sky. It's just that we have to look at it. And that's the title of the book, Finding the Blue Sky. The blue sky is there, you know.
We just have to see it. Perceive
yes.
it and know it within ourselves. Yes,
yes,
that's very, very interesting. You know, happiness, we're talking about happiness. In my book, The Living Spirit, I express this idea of happiness because I engaged in a reading for my granddaughter, Samantha, because I realized she was troubled by something. And I received an impression showing her holding a dandelion seed pod that forms after the flower fades. And she was blowing this white puff into the wind after making a wish. So I asked her what her wish was, but she wasn't sure. And very soon after this, I was encouraged to read a book by Dr. Wayne Dyer, a new children's book, I Am. And it came to a page that had the exact image I had seen for Samantha. And the text accompanying the drawing said, "Along the way, you will find great happiness and love, and you'll learn that wishes come true from within, not above, or not around us." Just what you were just saying, that it is not the outside world that needs to engage us. It's our thoughts and our feelings of goodness and love and kindness that we were born with, and to express that into the world. That will make us happy, other people happy. Now, it was a week later when I was at the playground with Samantha, and she called out to me as she was flying high in the sky with a big smile, and she said, "I just want to be happy." She just yelled it out to me. So it seemed to me she had made her wish, and most of us feel that way. We just want to find happiness and greater love, but sometimes we allow the outside world to take us away from that great need.
I think that Samantha was also lucky to have a grandmother who appreciated the value of happiness and wanted to pass it on to her granddaughter.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, I do hope to pass that on to as many people as possible. You know, I read a study once that said men and women have trouble communicating because 50% of the time negative thoughts come into our mind. And sometimes we engage them when we shouldn't. And also men hear women's voice, like the sound of music, it goes to the back part of their brain, and they can't always respond immediately. So if women learn to allow the man to have the time to process what was said. They really are listening, the men, but women very often say, he's not listening to me. And it's a physical thing. Have you heard about that study? It was done in England, where the sound of a woman's voice goes to the back of a man's brain, to the music center, and he's sort of lulled into another state, and he can't always process and do what she's requesting. So I say this to a lot of women who say to me, they're not listening to me, but they are, but they just need a little time to process it. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I'm fascinated with all these gender-related wisdom, and that particular one I hadn't come across yet, but I have made a mental note of it, and yes, I do find it fascinating, and there is truth in it. And by the way, there are people men whose voices are like that too. The late Leonard Cohen was one such person. I think his voice also went to the back of many women's minds and engaged them emotionally.
And they were lulled into a sort of quiet state, so it took them a little time to process. That could very well be, but the study I read was about doing this with men, and I do have women who tell me they're not listening, so I say, but they are. They need time to process it. So let's go on to how do people sometimes prevent their own happiness, and it's no one else doing it to them. There's no one to blame. They are doing it to themselves, and they're sometimes their own worst enemy. So can you give us an idea about that?
Well, examples are everywhere. I mean, many relationships are damaged by, people focusing on the negative. I mean, nobody is perfect. Focusing on the person's shortcomings instead of gifts. Another example is what I call driving with the brakes on, which is sometimes we stop ourselves from doing what we need to do. For example, there is a dream job somewhere. You'd like to have it, but then you say, they wouldn't hire me. I bet you they have very high expectations or whatever. And you stop yourself from applying. Well, that's what I call driving with the brakes on. You know, let them make the decision. Don't you make the decision. Put yourself out there. And sometimes we do it with a romantic partner. We say, oh, I'd like to go out with her, but I don't think she'd be interested in me. Well, if you are interested, why don't you ask,
Well, what we're talking about here is a fear of the unknown. So you wrote that in the book about self-sabotage, because people also have a hard time letting go of their fear and also their suffering. So sometimes they prefer suffering that is just familiar to them. So what we're encouraging our listeners to do is to open their heart a little, not their mind, because the mind is full of fear and illusion. Open their heart and say, yes, take a chance. Go out of your comfort zone, and you will find you'll be smiling before too long, because you'll have very positive reactions if you just take the chance to do things a little differently. So don't be your own worst enemy. Don't create suffering for yourself. You know, we were taught to do that, perhaps as children, by parents or teachers who were fearful. And it's taken us a whole lifetime to reverse that and to say yes instead of no. So, this is a very important thing for our listeners to think about, how they're responding in their own lives to why they didn't take the job, why they didn't make the date, why they didn't go to the baseball game. It was all out of fear, and we don't need it. It's not necessary, We'll replace that with excitement for life. Instead of fear, we're going to put in excitement for this event or excitement for this moment or excitement for life. Let's give it a chance. So I think that's what we're hoping people can begin to do. Now, you observe that changing our focus from wants to needs will help us achieve well-being. And I agree with you. There is a very discernible difference between wants and needs. And if we're living too much in the physical world, we're not going to be able to know what might be best for us. So tell us something about that.
Well, a very down-to-earth example. You're hungry. You need food. There's no doubt about it. It's a physical need. You need food. That's a need. But your wants could be hamburgers, could be a salad, could be granola, could be anything. I mean, just walk down the aisles of the grocery store. Some of them very unhealthy, bad for you. Some of them healthy. But unless you are somehow aware of the need behind the want, you want French fries, but can you come back to the need from the want, the hunger? Unless you can do that, you can't change your diet.
Right. You also say that the Buddhist tradition is suspicious of wants. It relabels them as cravings, and this can, make us make some choices that possibly wouldn't be the best for us. So we want to become aware of that. What are just cravings and what are really needs that will propel us onto the best direction possible for us going forward? So if we think about it before we act, we're always going to realize what was just a want and what is a real need for our soul journey and what we came to this life to really discover more about ourselves and more about the joyfulness of being happy and being our soul self, so to put it, instead of our physical, ego-minded world self. So I think that's all connected. I would say that's all connected. And it just takes practice, actually. Practice
yes,
in thinking
practice.
About our thought before we act.
Yes, and that is, of course, mindfulness. That's
yes.
the definition of mindfulness. And the original dictionary definition of has to do with remembering. Mindful of the fact that I was very tired. I didn't go out that night, for example. That's mindful, meaning keeping in mind, remembering, being aware. So, you've described mindfulness in a roundabout way, but that's exactly what it is.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you, Joseph Emmett, author of Finding the Blue Sky, for sharing your book, which aims to move readers towards personal growth, integrating positive psychology, and also the ancient wisdom of Buddhism. To purchase the book, go to Amazon or mindfulnessmeditationcenter.org. In summarizing today's episode of Healing from Within, we have discovered the beauty and importance of our heart essence. When our heart is open, we invite others to open up also and discover intimate and loving relationships, not only with other people, but with nature, and this affects our level of happiness. As Joseph wrote, the heart can also open through wisdom. Wisdom points out that I'm woven with the same elements as all other beings. We all have the same challenges and aspirations. I'm not separate from this. I'm not a freak of nature. Much suffering results from creating a gap between us and them, between me and her or him, between pets and farm animals, between the houseplant I care for lovingly and the tree in the forest that I turn into lumber. That tree breathed out the oxygen that I am breathing now. We are literally parts of the same organism. In the end, wisdom and compassion also create each other. If wisdom is not creating compassion, then it is not true wisdom. It has turned into an intellectual game separated from life. Joseph Emmett and I, as lovers of music, people, nature, and life, would have you remember your soul and heart essence as you focus on doing the right thing for the sheer joy of feeling good and connecting to the here and now. Search for those people and events in life that inspire and assist you in seeing past loss, sickness, old age, and death to promote acceptance and bring your focus into the present moment where life can be felt with happiness. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to hear and read about leaders in the field of metaphysics, science, religion, spirituality, psychology, energy medicine, and to discuss ways towards personal and collective growth and change. Shows may also be heard on DreamVision7Radio.com and WebTalkRadio.net. Thank you.